Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for joining us. My name is Bob Griswold. I just wanted to also say welcome to the second or third winter this winter, and then I think by the time you hear this show, it should be back to summertime. So, my name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Harrop.
Pat Park.
We're going to figure out where we're going to go, and I think we said the U.S. legislature right now is dealing on budgets. And are we going to move forward?
The House is working on a budget. The Senate is working on a budget. And what they want to do is pass a budget through reconciliation. Because if they pass it through reconciliation, they need a simple majority. They don't need the filibuster-proof majority. So there was discussion when Trump became president about whether it's going to be one bill or two bills, and I don't have the answer to that. But I know right now they have to have a budget. Is it by March 31st? Is that the deadline? So the reconciliation comes when the Senate's version and the House version are compared, and then it gets voted on, and a simple majority will pass it.
Well, the question is, are they going to use a continuing resolution? Because I read an article that said if they use the CR, then all this money that DOGE has cut is refunded again.
Oh, and we don't want to do that.
Well, then no CR.
Well, something has to be done about this deficit. I mean, we're up over $36 trillion now, and I understand that just the interest alone is over 25% of all the tax revenues that come in. And it's getting worse. There was an article in the Epoch Times recently by this economist, and he was just projecting what's going to happen if we don't get off the path we're on now. And he wasn't talking 30, 40 years from now. He's talking about 5-10 years from now. The whole budget could collapse. The value of the dollar could collapse. And it's a serious crisis, and I'm glad that, you know, we've got Elon Musk and his group working on it. But they need to get serious about it. Way long overdue.
If they manage to get these cuts through, first of all, the interest on the debt will come down, and as you start getting the interest down, then you can have a chance on getting the debt down. I mean, there is so much waste and abuse that they are finding. And the question is, do they have the horsepower to stop it from continuing?
Well, my understanding, too, another thing that's going on is the fact that a lot of this debt that we have accumulated was originally established at like 2%. 1.5%, 2% at a very low rate because that was the rate at the time. Mm-hmm. A lot of that's coming due. And now the interest rates are up 5-6% at that area, and that's going to, even if they do nothing, that's going to like triple the interest that has to be paid on part of the national debt.
And the Feds say that they have no reason to roll back the interest rates now.
I believe the Fed has become very political. They kept rates low during most of Biden, and they're not willing to raise them or to lower them under Trump. I think they're another group that needs to go away.
Yeah, Jeremy Powell said before Trump came into office that he wasn't going to do what Trump told him to do.
Going off on a rabbit hole tangent or whatever else. Now, this week, we've also heard that the president's group, the DOGE group, were not allowed into the Treasury, and then that's now come to pass. But hearing more about the Treasury Department and the computer services within the Treasury Department, all of the U.S. Treasury Department computer services are supplied by the Federal Reserve, if I understand.
GSA.
What I heard on the radio, and that's what I wanted to make sure, what I heard on the radio was that the Federal Reserve, the banking system, is the one that's taking baloney. Baloney. The Federal Reserve is a private corporation. It is not a government corporation.
And the Federal Reserve, you look at it historically, didn't exist until the early 1900s, like 1913.
Yeah.
And prior to that, the government and elected officials were actually the ones controlling these issues about the budget and about the interest rates and the money supply and so on and so forth. Where now it's this Federal Reserve is just a group of private people. And I think it was J.P. Morgan was the one who started it, initiated it.
The book about the Federal Reserve, that one of the best books, is called The Creature from Jekyll Island.
Yeah.
And in there, they explain the lies that were told to create the Federal Reserve and the undercover, the secretive garbage that went into creating it, and that the true purpose of the Federal Reserve was to concentrate banking wealth and money into the hands of a few very privileged people in New York City.
No.
And it's pretty much done that.
Yeah. Now, question, has that policy migrated into our Treasury Department?
What policy?
Especially into the budgeting process and whatever else, where you put money into, you allocate money in a budget, but it's never spent. And we're seeing DOGE undermine...
Well, it seems
expose where money is or is not going.
Well, the Treasury Department has never said no.
Never.
To pay in a check.
Never said no.
So the Treasury Department's kind of just a pass through.
And there's a lot of people.
Creation.
There's a lot of people there that are paid to just be pass throughs.
Right. So it's hard to say that Treasury Department controls anything. They pay whatever somebody asks them to pay. You know, DOGE found that somebody that's 150 years old is getting Social Security. I'm really curious about that one.
We want to meet him, don't we?
Yeah.
No, you don't. He's been underground for a long time. You don't want to meet him. It was like they had a case several years ago. There was a family, a woman in Kinston. And apparently her husband had passed away, but in order to keep his Social Security going, they put his cadaver, his body, in a chest freezer.
Oh.
He was in there for several years till they finally, now how they found out, I don't know, but they were collecting that Social Security. So this guy that's 150 years, so supposedly, you can imagine, he's in somebody's freezer somewhere. keep him on ice. You know?
That reminds me of the movie Bernie, but we won't go there.
But, you know, another related thing about this fraud and abuse, which, you know, it just comes out every day. It's just amazing. I think it was Musk and his group reported that there was $100 billion per year being sent out to people for various social programs, food stamps, I guess all this stuff. And of those people, there were $100 billion was going to people that didn't even have Social Security numbers. So you get back to the issue of who are we giving this taxpayer money to?
Who's getting this money?
Illegal aliens, people who don't even have it. The accountability is so ridiculously inadequate. And so, you know, it's so wonderful to see what Musk is accomplishing.
Yeah, because in the Treasury Department, he said the Treasury Department can't pass an audit because the squares that are on those checks that are supposed to have an audit number are blank.
Crazy.
And that there's a do not pay list, but it takes a year to get on the do not pay list, but then the Treasury Department pays them anyway.
Yeah. Well, and you can see it's interesting how as these things come out, the Democrats are up in arms. They're protesting. They're actually making veiled threats against Musk. They're calling him, is he the new dictator or whatever? They got all these, inappropriate terms they use. So, because they know they're losing their constituents. A lot of their constituents are people who are getting these benefits illegally or don't really qualify for them, and then all of a sudden, they're losing that. That's what their appeal has always been. Give out money to people, and they will support and vote for you.
You know, Alan,
and that is being threatened.
The only correction I'm going to make is that that is not limited to Democrats.
Probably not.
That is not limited to Democrats.
Yeah, but you don't hear the Republicans screaming.
You don't hear the Republicans screaming, no.
It was interesting to me. Time magazine cover had a picture of Elon Musk sitting at the president's desk. And when a reporter asked Trump about it, his reply was, oh, Time magazine? I didn't realize they were still publishing.
Yeah. Are they still in business?
I haven't seen one in a long time.
Well, but that it's
that it, was one of those gotcha questions. He was supposed to get mad and have a temper tantrum, but he didn't.
But he's not the one having the temper tantrums. And it has been said that the people squealing the loudest are the ones that are in the target.
That are in on the grift.
Yeah, and it's very interesting. I mean, I'm sorry, I saw the video of Maxine Waters the other day, and
you mean at the Department of Education?
Oh,
what a fool.
And I think that that paid security person there probably had the very best day of his life.
He should get a medal for standing up.
For standing there and taking
not letting them
abuse.
In. You know?
But, you know, the executive department of the government, the executive branch of the government, has the authority to control the executive branch of the government.
That's right. And the president has plenary power, so he has total power over the executive branch. And so these judges that are going into the executive branch and saying, the first one was ridiculous, not even the Treasury Secretary can look at Treasury data. I mean, just ridiculous. Or you have to spend money that, you know, all of these judges are going inside the executive branch and making policy and making inappropriate orders. And Jonathan Turley said, well, don't worry because the appeals court will kill it. Well, the appeals court for the first one, the judge that was in Rhode Island, declined to let it, call it. So it stands.
Well, it was interesting that one of the judges that is protesting the investigation into USAID, his wife works for an NGO that's being funded by USAID. So the neutrality of these judges is somewhat in question.
Yeah, you're talking about Judge McConnell. When we come back, I'd like to address Judge McConnell.
And, of course, that was exposed on the first day of the president. Trump was in office when the bishop was speaking about the
immigrants. And then we found out she was getting $53 million from NGOs.
Okay, folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCT8 Wake Up Call.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, just people in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back. And again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Again, this is the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Pat, you wanted to continue?
Well, I wanted to talk about Judge McConnell, the first judge that entered the TRO, the temporary restraining order. A lot of things wrong with that temporary restraining order. First of all, our judicial system is founded on due process. And the Supreme Court has made it clear that the first step of due process is to give the other party notice that you are proceeding against them. And the federal rules of procedure require you to give due notice. And they're very clear on what constitutes notice. Sending an email at 7:30 at night on a Friday night is not...
Not due process?
Not due process, no. And that's what the Letitia James and the 18 AGs from blue states, including North Carolina, did with this complaint and memorandum of law that they filed against Trump. They sent the email at 7:30 on Friday night, 7:32, 7:39, they filed an affirmation by this lawyer who said, yep, I gave them notice by sending this email. The judge, the emergency judge on duty, was appointed by Obama. His wife works for an NGO funded by USAID. That's a conflict of interest. He never should have heard this thing. He signed the TRO on an ex parte basis, which means the government was not there. Their side was not heard. So the only side that was heard was the side asking for the TRO. They had given the judge a proposed TRO. He signed it at 1 o'clock in the morning. Now,
which he rightly should not have signed.
No, he shouldn't have, because he shouldn't have been able to read the complaint and the memorandum of law in that from 7:30 to 1 o'clock. The complaint was 60 pages long. They cited 54 cases. He can't possibly have read the 54 cases. The memorandum of law was almost 200 pages long. There's no way that he had time to study and come to a reasonable judicial opinion on what they were asking. And they were asking for a TRO on the basis that irreparable harm would be suffered. There's a rule on irreparable harm, and you have to jump through four hoops in order to show irreparable harm. They didn't show it. They didn't jump through those hoops. He doesn't mention it, any of the hoops in his order. So the order on its face is a violation of the federal rules of civil procedure. The procedural due process was faulty because it didn't comply with the rule either. The fact that he could go into the Treasury Department and keep the Treasury Secretary from seeing the
Treasury data?
Treasury data.
Or controlling Treasury bureaucrats.
By saying that it would cause irreparable harm is ridiculous on its face. This guy is an Obama appointee. He was the emergency judge on duty on a Friday night in New York. Letitia James, who's the AG in New York, she's the one trying to bankrupt Trump. She spearheaded this whole operation. There's an 1867 case called Mississippi versus Johnson, which established that the judiciary has no authority to enjoin the president in carrying out his official duties. affirming that courts lack jurisdiction to direct the president's discretionary decisions. Well, his discretionary decisions would include how he spends his money from the executive branch. But the courts are ignoring this prohibition, which goes back to 1867. And there have been cases since then for the same proposition that the president has plenary power over the executive branch.
Now, I just want to interrupt for just a second, because we're looking at a case where a judge has put an improper order in place. Mm-hmm. And at least temporarily, the president has stopped, even though he has challenged that case and that moved forward. Now, go back a couple of months ago. If that same thing happened under Biden, he would just go ahead and do whatever he had to do.
Right.
Okay. So what we're saying is the president is willing to abide by the system, even when it's flawed. He's making sure he overcomes it.
Yeah, he hasn't ignored court orders like Obama and Biden. But let me point out that it's interesting that he was ordered to unfreeze the funds, but managed to fire the CFO at FEMA for spending funds because there was a freeze on them. There's a conflict there. Although I have to say, I think it's delicious that he fired the CFO, the grant analyst, and the clerks that pressed the button to send that $59 million.
Does this go up to the Supreme Court? Is that what happens here?
It's going to have to.
And just for the record, it is being reported that $59 million has been clawed back.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
You know, $59 million, wasn't that being spent to reimburse
New York City? Yeah,
New York City for spending all this money for the hotels and the free meals and the cash and the cell phones.
It was for food and
for
security.
All these illegals,
yes,
right?
Food and security and luxury hotels.
Yeah, Christy Noem posted on Twitter, "I have clawed back the full payment that FEMA deep state activists unilaterally gave to NYC migrant hotels. FEMA was funding the Roosevelt Hotel that serves as a trendy Aragua base of operations and was used to house Lake and Riley's killer."
Hmm.
So that's been gotten back.
Yeah, and that's Roosevelt's supposed to be one of the luxury hotels.
I mean, you and I'll say this. I couldn't afford to stay there. You know, and we're putting illegals up there.
Right.
Well, they're
tearing the place up. You know they are.
Yeah.
And we're giving the people in Georgia and North Carolina, what was it, $750 they got for their entire, the impact of the hurricane, certain areas. Yeah.
And they can apply for it online.
More now, but I'm just saying they were spending, I think, $500 a night.
They were being
And then
ignored.
Roosevelt Hotel, it's just,
yeah,
but the thing is the bureaucrats do what they want. But this business about the judges and so on, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Pat, that there's like 300 federal district judges throughout the country. Is it 200, 300?
Yeah.
Between 200 and 300.
Right.
And what we have is they go to a particular district judge, one of those.
A judge
shop. Let's
say
he's 200. They shop him, and that judge issues an order. Now, it may eventually get overturned. However, that district judge in an isolated area of the country is making a ruling that affects the entire functioning of the country under the president.
For some period of time.
An issue that Clarence Thomas has a problem with, and that is that normally when a federal district judge enters an order, it only has meaning in his district. But these judges now are doing countrywide injunctions,
yes.
And the last time one of those went up to the Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas wanted to have it considered because he said they have dubious power to issue countrywide injunctions. And so when McConnell's goes up to the Supreme Court, I hope that's one of the issues that they're going to consider and rule on. And, you know, this is another thing. They say don't push something and make bad law. for yourself. The Democrats are going to end up with what they consider bad law when this goes to the Supreme Court, because they're going to uphold the president's power, and now we're going to have precedent. So the next time they try to pull something like this, we have brand new precedent, not an 1867 case from Mississippi to talk about.
But that's good. Glad you clarified that, Pat, because that was exactly the point I was trying to make, is how a judge in a small part of the country
Rhode Island,
a decision that affects the entire country. And that is inherently not right. It doesn't even make any kind of common sense.
No.
It was interesting that I read I wrote a resolution a couple of years ago to present to the GOP county convention. And it came from an article, or actually it was a book written by this judicial analyst. And he basically was saying that the courts are functioning as oligarchs, and to the extent that the court system really has no effective oversight. Now, some of the issues can go to the Supreme Court, but they can only take a limited number of cases. And what the resolution said, based on this person's recommendation, it wasn't my idea, I just followed through on it, was that the General Assembly, for example, in North Carolina, the General Assembly should have the right to override the state Supreme Court. Because let's say, for example, on picture ID, there was a big controversy about that. It was delayed and so on. The people voted for it. The General Assembly voted for it.
To add it to the Constitution.
That's right. And you had in the state Supreme Court, all you needed was one person who was against it, if it was a closed vote. And so the resolution would have allowed the General Assembly, by a two-thirds vote, to come back and override a state Supreme Court decision. They'd have to have two-thirds. You know, it wouldn't be easy to do, but it would allow some way of correcting the state Supreme Court. But when I presented that resolution, you know who was all up in arms about it? The lawyers and the judges that were at the convention, they just had a hissy fit about it.
Yeah.
And it made sense to me. The idea is it's the power to the people.
Well, Congress,
the people control the government,
Congress,
not oligarchs,
can,
not judges.
Can limit the jurisdiction of the federal courts. If they don't want them to rule on a particular topic, they can pass a law and say that it's outside the purview of the federal courts. I don't know that it's ever been done.
Yeah.
But theoretically, it's possible.
Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, thank you for listening to CCTA Wake Up Call.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout Eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Welcome back. And again, thank you for listening to the sponsors and supporters. I think we're going to go international now, and we're going to head off to, I guess, Israel and the release of those hostages.
President Trump made a comment this past week that looking at the condition of the hostages that were released, the three men that were released, they looked like the people they found in the concentration camps. They evidently had not been well taken care of. And he said essentially that he's done. And he wants all of the remaining hostages released by noon on Saturday, or else
all hell will break loose.
Yes. And Netanyahu has echoed that sentiment.
Yes.
Negotiations are with Jordan and Egypt and the other countries to take the residents of Gaza, if there are any left when we get done, into their countries and to turn Gaza over.
Jordan's already said no.
Well, they had a bad experience.
Yeah, well,
with the PLO when they tried to overthrow their government.
And they said that is the Arab position, no.
But one of those governments said that they would take 2,000 children. I don't know whether they didn't want any adults, but they would take 2,000 of these orphan children or whatever.
Well, they might have a chance.
Gaza, so
they might have a chance of reprogramming the children.
Yeah,
the absolutely. Adults are everywhere. The adults have gone. I mean, after they tried to overthrow the government of Lebanon. I'm sorry, overthrow the government of Jordan. Lebanon said, we'll take them because we have a country where Christians and Muslims and Jews all live in peace. Well, they got into Lebanon, and they totally changed the dynamic of that country. And what was formerly the garden spot of the Middle East is now a disaster zone. So the Arab nations are reluctant to take the, quote, Palestinians, unquote.
Now, come noon on Saturday, what does all heck breaking loose or all hell?
I don't know. He didn't say. He said, you'll find out.
No, because I know the first thing that I know is, guess what? There's no water. There's no electricity. There's no services, no food, no nothing coming into that area, period.
And we gave them the bombs they need to bust up those tunnels.
My understanding is that Israel, in preparation for what's going to happen on Saturday, if it comes to pass, they're already staging troops and staging things that they had backed off while this agreement was going. And my understanding is also that Hamas is the one that's reneging on the deal. It's not it's not Israel. So let's make sure we understand
that. Hamas said Israel had violated the ceasefire.
Yeah.
And then their response to Trump was threats are of no use.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. You know, it's going to be interesting because I don't think Trump's going to make a threat that he's not going to follow up on.
I don't either.
And he and Netanyahu, obviously, they have a plan. And that plan might include just what you had mentioned about these bombs, Mary. That might include attacking Iran. This opportunity should not be missed because the key to these terrorist activities and these terrorist groups is Iran. Iran and then nuclear capacity, that has to be taken out at some point. And then they're never going to give it up. And this may be what Trump's talking about. I hope it does. It needs to be dealt with.
I think it was interesting last week, I guess, when Netanyahu visited President Trump in the White House and presented a gold pager to the president as a symbol of, yes, we know what it takes.
See, and you know, the thing that troubles me is that Israel has changed its approach about hostage taking. If you go back and look in the 60s and 70s, when there were a number of Israelis being taken hostage, their approach was, we will not negotiate with hostage takers. Mm-hmm. And they would go in and they would attack whoever was taking these hostages, attempt to get them back. But now they've moved to this issue. Not only do they swap hostages, but they give the terrorists hundreds of hostages for every one Israeli. So here, these terrorists, what do they have to lose by taking hostages?
Well, you have to understand.
They get their people back.
There's a lot of people in Israel that want the government to do whatever it takes to get those, give away all of the Palestinians that are in jail. Give them away. We don't want this war. We're against the war. We want the hostages, blah, blah. So he has a political situation that he's riding over there as well.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. But from the standpoint of those Israelis that believe that, the truth of the matter is, if you allow hostage takers to be successful, and that is by swapping and them getting back more than they're giving up, you're going to get more of it.
Of course.
And that's exactly what happens. Success breeds success.
Well, we said
and you that. To my opinion, you got to, and this is, I know this sounds harsh and inhumane and so on. I think the way you've got to look at this is, if they take hostages, those hostages are dead. You got to look at them, because you're never going to get them back. It's terrible to have to say that, but you've got to then hit that enemy where those hostages are no longer a source of protection for them. You got to eliminate that.
You know,
and it's a very hard thing to do from a humanitarian standpoint.
But we as a country, of course, back in World War II, we bombed the heck out of Dresden. And the reason that we bombed the heck out of Dresden was to interrupt the rail tracks bringing the Jews to the concentration camps. Unfortunately, there were a lot of innocent lives lost there. Yeah. I think we're going to have a similar thing now in Gaza.
Well, the U.S. position used to be that we don't
negotiate.
We don't negotiate with terrorists. But Obama, remember, he sent pallets of cash.
Yes.
For hostage, and now here we are begging for American hostages from Hamas. So, you know, we've changed our position on hostages in negotiation with terrorists as well.
Yeah, and that is perceived by the terrorists as weakness.
Right.
In other words, we are weak, we will give in to their demands, and then you get more of it. And it's an unfortunate human characteristics to use other people's. They don't care about people's lives.
And
terrorists, not at all.
I understand their attitude. Apparently, is that, you know, they're hostages, that of the ones that we are holding as prisoners. That's just fodder. Yeah. That doesn't have anything to do
with
reality.
Well, since when does counting dead hostages count as complying with the requirement to give up the hostages?
Good point.
You know, they're dead. You did not
take care of them.
You didn't honor the agreement, because we were expecting living hostages, and you're giving us dead bodies.
That does not compute.
Yeah. Maybe we don't know how many are alive.
Maybe we should exchange them for dead prisoners.
Yeah, well, they don't have any dead prisoners.
And in a related issue that's going on with this business with Gaza, is Trump came up with this idea of how we can get out of this two-state solution advocacy that's never worked. It hasn't worked. It will never work, because the Palestinians, Hamas, they want to destroy Israel. Okay. So what Trump is basically saying, let's just take Gaza and depopulate it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Move those people out. Let's try to make it some sort of a successful area where people can live and people come invest from all over the world and so on. Now, a lot of people look at that and say, well, that's not right. That's not treating the Palestinians. But nothing else has worked. So we're going to keep going down the same rabbit hole, year after year after year. They've been talking about this two-state solution since the 1950s.
Well, you know, when Trump was president the first time, he stopped all aid to the Palestinians. And when they did the Abraham Accords, they cut the Palestinians out.
Right.
Because Trump said the only way we're going to have peace is to go around the Palestinians. And then when Biden came back in, John Kerry said the only way to peace is through the Palestinians. And look what we've got.
Yep.
So I'm looking for, and Trump now has reinstated the sanctions on Iran, which is going to squeeze the money supply for the Hamas and Hezbollah and the Houthis, not fast enough, but it will work eventually.
But one of the things that happened when Trump was in office the first time was the Taylor Force Act, where they stopped the aid to the Palestinians because it was going to the families of the terrorists. And Congress passed the Taylor Force Act, which said we will not give the Palestinians money that is going to the families of their terrorist martyrs.
The pay-for-slay program.
Yeah. And Biden ignored that and put the money back. And I believe Trump has cut it off again.
Good.
Staying on the international thing for just a couple more minutes. Ukraine and Russia, where have we gone on that?
Well, Elon Musk is meeting in Munich, I believe, and Marco Rubio is there too, and they're
Musk.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean Musk. I meant
Hegseth.
Yeah. And Marco Rubio are meeting in Munich with the Russian delegate, and I assume there's a Ukrainian in there somewhere, to negotiate or talk about peace in Ukraine. And Zelensky has already said that there is a certain bit of that land that he is willing to give up.
And I know that Zelensky did have a call with the president apparently today.
And the president's talked to Putin too.
Right. So
they're both willing to negotiate.
There is some movement.
But NATO, Ukraine will not be a member of NATO.
Yeah,
well, we wouldn't want Mexico joining a Russian coalition. So I don't think Ukraine needs to be a member of NATO.
No, I don't either.
No, but going back now, again,
that's what started the whole fight.
Yes, it is.
And that even goes back further because Ukraine was willing to give up its nuclear weapons because they could join NATO. We would be willing to
protect them. And that didn't work
them.
Out
that
well.
That did not work
but
out.
But you have to respect, I think, the degree to which Trump now, when he comes into office, and he said this when he was campaigning, that he would to get that war stopped. And he's certainly taking steps, and he's making it very clear what the parameters are. Ukraine's going to have to give up some territory. Second, like you said, Pat, they will not be a member of NATO, and laying out the conditions. And that's where you start your negotiation. You got the sides. Each side's going to have to get something, or it's not going to go forward. Where all we heard from Biden is we're going to support Ukraine until they win, or until the end, whatever that end was.
Right.
And that wasn't going to happen.
And they weren't going to win. It's obvious they're not going to win.
Yeah. And then
okay. Folks, we're 17 days into the presidency, but we're going to have to take a break right now to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is the CCTA Wake Up Call Show.
The inventory reduction sale at East 70 Pawn in New Bern absolutely ends Monday. Currently, all firearm inventory in stock is on sale, and that includes plenty of ammo too. However, at the close of business on Monday, this sale will end. Don't miss out on hundreds of handguns, rifles, and shotguns, all priced to move. East 70 Pawn has firearms from all the best manufacturers, like Glock, Sig Sauer, Smith & Wesson, Beretta, Benelli, Henry, Springfield Armory, Ruger, Mossberg. Well, you get the idea. So, because East 70 Pawn has so many guns in stock. Drew has told the guys to reduce inventory now, before the new models start pouring in. Take advantage of outrageous deals on existing inventory, including a large selection of AR-style rifles, magazines, and a vast selection of ammo. East 70 Pawn is Craven County's largest and most well-stocked gun shop. The staff is knowledgeable, friendly, and provides exceptional service, whether you're a collector or looking to purchase your first gun. Hurry in today and save big. East 70 Pawn, across from the fairgrounds in New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back. And again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. And again, we're heading off to Mary. Where did you have it?
I would like to mention that yesterday,
meaning Tuesday,
teacher. Oh, that's right, because we're recording this on Wednesday. A teacher who had been arrested in Russia because he had medical marijuana with him was released back to the United States. And his mother, who was, I believe, 95, approached Trump at a rally and said, "Can you get my son home?"
I think he said it was the Butler rally, too.
That's what I heard.
The one where he was shot.
And he said, "Yes, I will get him home." And he has kept his word. And there are some other hostages that were released today. From Belarus. I don't know the details of that at all.
Only one of them was an American, and they asked that their name not be publicized.
Okay.
And the other two were... I don't know if they were Estonians or something. They had something to do with medical something.
Okay. But President Trump has had an impact on the world stage, and we are seeing good things happen because of it. We are beginning to recover from the 4 years of President Biden.
I think we're seeing some respect.
Well, you would think that a teacher had enough sense not to go overseas and take illegal drugs with him, and look at all the consequences that we have to involve the highest part of our government to get him back. What an idiot!
And we, in a lot of times, also Pat, you wind up releasing somebody that we've arrested legitimately to make the swap. But what's going on, you know, with this that school teacher? We don't know how much marijuana he had. Just because it's medical. How much was it? But like you say, you go into a country that for which you're not allowed to bring it in. You bring it in for whatever reason, then you should suffer the consequences.
You end up in prison, in a Russian prison.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, he looks pretty good for having been in a Russian prison.
He's been eating pretty well.
I watched his teeth. His teeth look okay. His weight looks okay.
He looks better than the people who came back from Gaza.
Exactly.
So now you wanted to talk about Greenland also.
Yes, that's a topic. Again, it's one of these things that Trump has brought up in his... It's only been 18 days. So what he's done is just so amazingly, interesting. And
fire hose.
He's just laying it all out on the line. But this business is about Greenland. You look at it, I did a little research on this. In fact, there's going to be an article coming out, I think, maybe in next week's County Compass about this topic. But the concern about Greenland from American security standpoint has been occurring since the early 50s. In fact, President Truman made an offer to Denmark to purchase Greenland for $100 million in gold in 1950. 1950. and Denmark turned it down, but he was able to get a deal where we could build a military bases in Greenland, which we did. We had what they call the Thule Air Base.
Thule.
Which was Thule.
It's pronounced Thule.
Thule,
it means farthest point.
Oh, okay. Well, it's pretty far. Because it's 600 miles beyond the Arctic Circle and about 900 miles from the North Pole. But anyway, so it's been a military base, and it still is, at my understanding.
It's been renamed.
Yeah.
It's Space Force now.
Of course. Yeah, of course. They've got to rename everything.
I saw a picture of Thule, and they had a sign out in the snow. And it was their treasury where you go to get paid for travel and stuff. And it said, we deal in cold cash.
Yeah. But the thing about the Greenland is it's becoming even more important to this country from a security standpoint, because part of what's happening in the Arctic is some of the ice is melting. Okay. As that's doing that, it's going to allow ships and transportation across the Arctic Circle, which never was possible before because of the ice. And this is going to allow China and Russia to begin using that area. And they're going to want, especially China, they're going to want to follow up their road project, whatever they
Belt
call
road.
It. Yeah, the Belt Road Project, where they actually try to control natural resources around the world. And Greenland, from what I understand, has tremendous amount of natural resources, oil, coal, but particularly they have these
rare earth
things like uranium and lithium and
cobalt.
So on, which are critical for the mine. And here's the situation. If we don't get influence over Greenland, then we're leaving it subject to countries like China, Russia, to come in and have the influence they need to be able to start accessing that. So you have to, congratulate Trump for being able to see the risk. And in fact, in 2019, he made an offer to Denmark to purchase Greenland. So this is just follow-up something, and I hope that they can come up with some agreement where we can get a closer tie so that we prevent Greenland from becoming a source of natural resource for these other countries.
Well, I'm glad you put it in context, because when Trump first mentioned it, the press were all laughing at him like it was some crazy idea, like he's a crazy man.
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy like a fox.
Yep. He's got the vision that nobody else has.
Right.
And the courage to do it. Just like with Gaza, he had the courage to come out with what seemingly people would look at and say, that's a crazy idea. But he has the courage to come. And that's the only way you solve these problems. You got to be willing to try something new. And that's his approach. And the other thing he's doing is like the Panama Canal, where China's gotten so much influence over that. So he's pushing that to get that back under our auspices, our control.
He has some vision. And it's interesting that he put out that edict to everybody that you need to, if you wanted to leave the government, you got to put in your request by February 6th.
8th or something.
Last week. And 20,000 or 30,000 people?
20,000.
20,000? Okay, I heard that
just like 2% of the workforce.
Yeah, then I hear somebody saying, well, Iron Mountain, because they handle everybody's retirement with paperwork, they can only handle 10,000 a month.
That's what Musk said, because it's all on paper.
It's all on paper.
And I read an article this morning that said they tried to digitize it, and they spent $160 million. It failed, so they're back to manual paper.
Well, the combination needs to be done because, if you understand genealogy, people have had genealogy programs for the last 40, 50 years or something like that. But every time the computer system changes and gets updated, all the data that you have stored in your old genealogy program is no longer accessible. Now, we can go back to the 1600s and look at paper records. So I know paper has a good reasoning and digitally has good reasoning for efficiency, but we've got to balance that.
Well, he says it takes a month to process somebody's retirement. That's ridiculous.
It's nuts. Yes, it's nuts. It doesn't take... In private industry, it doesn't take a month to get somebody out of work.
So I wondered about the financial officer at FEMA that got fired. How long does it take to process her firing?
You're done.
Yeah.
You're done.
Yeah. Hand me your badge. We'll escort you out of the building. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Okay, what else we got? I know that we also need to talk about Tulsi Gabbard.
Has been confirmed.
Yay.
What does that mean to us?
Well, I just read that by the end of this afternoon, and this is not I don't know if this is Tulsi or not, all the Jeffrey Epstein files are going to be released. We'll see if that happens.
Well, I watched part of Tulsi's confirmation hearing, and do you know that the sticking point was that she was unwilling to call Snowden a traitor?
Yeah.
Everybody on both sides of the fence were mad that she wouldn't call him a traitor. And what she kept reiterating was her position that he did us a favor by showing us that the government was using our surveillance against Americans when it shouldn't have been doing that. And that her goal as the DNI was to make sure that the channels were open where people that had complaints in the intelligence business could elevate those complaints to the highest levels without feeling like the only alternative they had was to do something like what Snowden did. And she kept reiterating that.
And we've seen a number of whistleblowers that have had a lot of repercussions against them, including all of a sudden they've passed away.
And the interesting part of what you just said is that Tulsi Gabbard was put by the Biden administration on the extra scrutiny
no-fly list.
Well, she wasn't on the no-fly list. She was on the extra scrutiny list. She was allowed to fly, but she had to go through extreme pat-downs and Lord knows what else every time she flew.
I hope she finds whoever did that and fires them.
Now, Pat, before we run out of time, you have something right on the top of the...
I have a Fannygate update. Don't forget, Fannie Willis is the prosecutor down in Georgia, the county prosecutor for Atlanta, that was prosecuting the RICO case against Trump, and then until she got kicked off the case because she was sleeping with the guy that she paid $770,000 to lead the case. Well, two things have happened with Fannie. The county commissioners, since she's a county office, failed to give her the budget that she asked for. And she's having a temper tantrum and has threatened to sue them if they don't give her more money. Does this make sense to anybody?
Where's she going to find Fannie a lawyer that works for free?
Well, I guess she'll sue them herself. But she was telling them that people will die if her office doesn't get some more millions. People will die.
And we've seen how responsibly she spent the money that she's been given.
Now, another thing is going on. She's teaming up with Representative Jasmine Crockett, from a Democrat from Texas, who is a out-and-out racist, who complains about white people nonstop. White boys' tears, she says. They're going to have an inaugural gala titled For the Love of Justice, where premier seating costs as much as $25,000.
Premier
and
seating.
We think somebody's going to pay
this,
that.
This is the average person can go and pay that, right?
Yes.
Well, they just want the fat cat donors to show up for that. $25,000 will buy you 2 10-person VIP tables and a chance to speak at the reception. Individual tickets are $500 apiece. It's a black tie attire, and the permitted wearable colors are black, pink, and gold only.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Sounds fascist. They tell you what color you have to wear.
That's right.
That's right. That doesn't sound like free speech.
No.
Folks, we've run out of time. That's the end of the CCTA Wake Up Call show for this week. You have a wonderful week.